You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Monday nights, up late. Broadcasting from stolen land. Satellite skies. Satellite skies. Satellite skies. Highlighting DIY and autonomous politics, music, and subculture with a different theme each week.
Are listening to Satellite Skies. We are broadcasting from the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation and would like to pay respects to elders past, present and emerging, and to pay respects to all the lives that have been lost and that continue to be lost in the colonization that is ongoing of this land. We also want to honour, recognise and support the resistance of First Nations people. So I'm Annie. I have not done my segment at all since we went to the broadcasting from home. Unfortunately, I've suffered quite an all-time low in motivation to make the show, seeing as I have to now do it, with the home technology, which I find quite hard. But I have decided that I should get it together. And this is kind of like a test one, I guess, where I'm going to see if I can do it. And we'll have some music and probably some of my rambling and hopefully start a new pattern of doing the show all the time. But first, we might listen to some music. And this first song is Abaddon Incarnate, Impaled Upon Your Zodiac.
We'll be right back.
And that was Ecocide with Proverb, and before that, Acute with Human Mistake. So as I said, I have not done my segment of the show pretty much since the COVID pandemic really took off in Australia. And I was thinking about what to do on this show back and what to talk about. And, you know, on this show, I've sort of spent a lot of time talking about different projects, different movements, news, commentary, things like that. But I guess, like, at a time where I feel, on the one hand, oversaturated by news, and I'm sure a lot of people are in the same situation, but also really confused about what does resistance or what does do movements mean and look like in this context at this time, I found it hard to kind of go, yeah, this or yeah, that, and this general sense of what do you do when everything seems pretty doom and gloom generally, as it often does or usually does, but maybe from a situation of further isolation or even more sense of powerlessness, to imagine what building connections with people or building a movement might look like. And I think, you know, this sort of dual reality of, on the one hand, you know, around the world in the last few months, there has been massive uprisings and resistance in the form of Black Lives Matter movement, but also, you know, in various countries and places against government controls, against authoritarianism, against the inequalities that are being emphasized by the coronavirus pandemic and the government responses to it. But I think from this context in Nam, you know, feeling a real disconnection from that. And on the one hand, obviously, people are resisting and fighting against the same inequalities and systems that people have often been fighting against in their day-to-day lives through this whole time. But in another perspective, you know, attending a Black Lives Matter protest, which felt like this moment of, you know, figuring out how resistance looks is still possible and is necessary, even in a time of fear of COVID and of transmitting COVID. But then I guess the backlash to that and a falling away. And an interesting reality that there were no further Black Lives Matter protests or other, you know, things like that in Nam, and how to kind of make decisions or how to sort of move in a time where especially the effect of the guilting and the individualistic response to COVID, this shaming, where, you know, people, like, I definitely know, I've been feeling this thing of, you know, maybe I'm afraid of COVID for myself, but more particularly, I'm afraid of being the person to spread it, you know, and this kind of naughty dad role that the Premier of Victoria has taken to really emphasise that, you know, the blaming of individual people for the spread of a wildly infectious virus has a huge impact. And, you know, so many people I know, including myself, like, you have this anxiety of, you know, what's happening, or this state control, or the fact that COVID fines are being targeted, of course, in certain suburbs that already face really high levels of policing because they have high proportions of migrant families or of poorer families. And, you know, the curfew, who's that targeting, and so on and so forth. But all the things that are going on, feeling this kind of, what do I do about it? And what is the online space? You know, like, what does it mean to connect with people in a way that really does build relationships and build movements in the online space? In what ways is it to some more accessible, not having to leave your house, but actually being able to engage in collective activities or events or learnings? And in what ways for some is it more exclusionary? You know, how do you access it? How do you find what it is to access? How do you use the sort of technology and things like that? But, you know, I've definitely participated in a range of reading groups and social things in the online space, but, you know, in terms of, and also some, you know, political education or like music events or things like that, where it has been interesting to be able to connect with people from around the globe in a different kind of way that maybe you wouldn't in person. But also the alienation, and also having spent so much time trying to, you know, think about, okay, unless you've got really great hacking skills, you know, like aside from clicking on petitions or something like that, or perhaps building some networks, like what in terms of resistance can be achieved in the online space? And what does that mean, you know, trying to push to maintain organizing in the real world space or something like that? What does that mean in a time where we're sort of facing this not going away for a really long period of time? So I guess the end to that was I didn't really know what to talk about, because it sort of feels like a really uncertain time, and, you know, at a time when resistance and change and transformation is equally, if not more important than any other time, but feels hard in a different kind of a way. But I am interested in hearing from people or connecting with people around, you know, especially if this is going to be reality for a time, like what do these things look like, and what are the possibilities? But we might listen to another song now. The next song is Kiri with Chatter in the Skull.
Oh,
This Is My Fist with I'm Not Even Trying. And before that, No Static with Trainwreck. Something I learned recently about vaccines and pandemics, I found, thought I wanted to share because, you know, just really, I guess, brought home so many things I'd been thinking about around, entitlement to health and well-being and how that works with the kind of structures that we have of power in the world, and, you know, that how organizations, I suppose, play into capitalist contractual arrangements between countries. And I was reading about how when that World Health Organization declares a pandemic, it actually triggers a contractual arrangement that's already been made between a whole range of donor countries and pharmaceutical companies who, you know, have entered into this thing, such that companies have already committed to pre-purchasing a certain amount of vaccines. So then when a pandemic is declared, they are obligated to pay that money, which will then fund research, which then means that when a vaccine is found, they'll get that certain amount of vaccines afterwards. And so, for example, during the SARS pandemic, a lot of European countries were trying to stop the World Health Organization from declaring a pandemic because SARS hadn't really come to Europe, and countries did not want to be locked in to buying these vaccines when they weren't actually that concerned about the virus. And so there was a delay on a lot of the other health precautions and funding arrangements that would have come into place had the World Health Organization declared a pandemic in relation to SARS earlier. But, you know, so from the moment that a pandemic was declared in terms of coronavirus, you know, I think in countries like Australia, especially because we, you know, really want the restrictions to end and want to be able to, you know, operate in life without staying home. You know, it's sort of like this thing of, oh, I really want the vaccine to happen and this kind of stuff. But, you know, just like the insidious nature of everything else, the capitalist arrangements around vaccines are that, you know, the richer countries have already committed to buy a certain proportion of vaccines when they're made from particular pharmaceutical companies anyway, like the bigger ones. And so, you know, I think it's something and those reflect who is able to put money into the researching. And so I think richer countries have committed to buy enough and therefore have, you know, pre-ordered enough of vaccines to be able to vaccinate at least 10% of their population, whereas there's no amount of the vaccine that's set aside for countries that can't afford to put in money or that don't have, finance to contribute. And so, from the outset, you know, the existence of a vaccine seems extremely linked to the future of border control. Like, where's there going to be a travel bubble? You know, who's going to be able to access the vaccine? And therefore, countries that can buy up a large amount of the vaccine, of course, can have a travel bubble with each other. And how does that serve to further displace and isolate people in places where, you know, they can't afford that sort of healthcare? And, you know, particularly as we've seen, I guess, already in terms of the impact that this has had on people trying to flee persecution or violence, you know, when Rohingya refugees were trapped on a boat off the coast of Malaysia and unable to land anywhere, which has already been an issue. But, you know, coronavirus has kind of given an additional impetus to not allow anybody to land in your country. But trapped there for months, and then the boat ended up sinking and a huge number of people died. And similar things have happened, you know, between sort of Libya where, you know, and Europe, where southern Italy and also Malta have refused to, you know, accept boats, and people have been stuck for ages and ages. But the way that, you know, access to vaccines is already linked to border control, but you know, with such a particular new and contagious virus, like what this looks like into the future seems really scary. You know, when you already have so many countries, you know, for whom things like measles or polio, which are completely, you know, in Australia, we're completely vaccinated against as a matter of course, are still endemic and still lead to so much death, disability and illness. You know, coronavirus is obviously just going to be the same, the same as that. And we're already seeing that in a whole range of different ways. But I think, you know, it's so interesting then when we do sort of look at the Russian example of the Russian vaccine now and sort of go, oh, it's so soon, it's so quick. You know, there's not been any safety trials. Although, you know, I don't know how many more safety trials like another country or company will be able to do in the 3 months or something like that before they're sort of saying they're going to try and have things ready by January or something like that. But, you know, the fact that like Russia and China, for example, are the only countries who are sort of promising to provide vaccines to countries that can't afford to buy them. Obviously, you know, in exchange for other things like trade routes or trade agreements or things like this. But, you know, when you're sort of talking like all the time, when we sort of talk on this day-to-day level of like, oh, I wonder if there'll be a vaccine, I wonder if there'll be a treatment, because we want to return to somewhat of like a ordinary life or something like that. The reality of vaccine being a currency, you know, being a form of capital, you know, just like any other kind of treatment, and the insidious dark deals that, you know, come into the reality of all of these sorts of public health issues. It's just kind of scary and overwhelming to think about. But we're going to listen to another song now, and this is Amateur Drunks with I'll Be Fine. was Rogernomics with Sail of the Century, and before that, Mollusk with Relief. One of the other things I've been thinking about is, you know, the concept, I suppose, of emergency. And from my context, in the place that I am, you know, growing up with a certain entitlement to health and well-being based on who I am, my identity, and the place that I live, you know, what I see as an emergency or as an unprecedented event, and particularly now where, you know, COVID, I guess it is definitely a new virus, and it's throughout the globe and it is having an impact in all places. But, you know, the perspective, particularly the Western perspective, of this being an unheard of, unprecedented event, I really, or like, you know, 1 in 100 years kind of thing, I wonder, you know, in places where the reality of ongoing infectious viruses and diseases that have a higher death rate have never gone away, have always been present, where even, you know, I guess dysentery is one of the biggest killers of people in the world every year, you know, and from contaminated water and things like that. But obviously COVID is like another thing which complicates and is threatening and, you know, to all people's lives everywhere. But, you know, what makes this an emergency, you know, for people for whom, you know, daily life is faced with these threats all the time. And, you know, how does that kind of come into, you know, in terms of those kind of global deals and arrangements and things like this, like the measures countries take to try and deal with the virus? So, for example, like, you know, what option do countries have not to do lockdowns if they are reliant on wealthier countries for trade, for immigration, for things like this, when, you know, if they don't sort of follow the same processes, you know, they'll most likely experience some kind of punishment, whether now or in the future, in terms of those kinds of travel bubbles and, you know, border situations, when the consequences of lockdown or the ability of countries to lock down, especially for a long period of time, are so different, you know, and the consequences of lockdown in places where, for example, it has disrupted, you know, even things like vaccination programs, such that there's been a number of polio outbreaks, measles epidemics, and things like this in places where, you know, health programs have been disrupted because of coronavirus lockdowns, or, you know, where the like measures to try and address the locust plague in East Africa, particularly in Kenya, were disrupted by the coronavirus lockdown, leading to so much more crops being destroyed, leading to, you know, heaps higher food insecurity and things like this. And it's talked about as an impact of coronavirus, but, you know, we also know that actually it's an impact of capitalism, white supremacy, colonialism, and these kinds of things. But how, when there is something like this virus, it's, you know, again, what does resistance look like in this context? Because it's sort of talked about and put forward as the thing that takes precedence, you know, over all other things, that you can't raise other questions or you can't do other things or everything else is on hold because this pandemic is like the first and foremost health emergency, which may not actually be true for all people and all places, you know, and even things like the increased reliance, particularly in the West, on plastics in the form of plastic masks and, you know, disposable products and delivery packaging and things like this, which enable the public health measures like working from home, like social distancing, you know, like mask wearing, but surgical mask wearing or whatever to be put in place. Again, like, where is that waste going to end up and who's going to bear the burden or the impact of the extremely high levels of waste production if those kinds of measures are ongoing into the future? Like, certain elements of lockdown have, you know, cut down on the production of waste or the production of carbon emissions and things like this to a degree, and yet other areas have increased. So places open up again, but those sorts of measures just become again like a new normal. Even the amount of testing, I guess, conducted in certain countries, when I was reading that, I think it was the Central African Republic, they said they had been given 100 tests only, and they're waiting for more tests to be delivered from the World Health Organization, but it hadn't come, compared to obviously the tens and tens of millions of plastic tests done in other countries. And again, who bears the burden of that waste or all these kinds of things? But where is the space for these sorts of conversations when often the ideas of health and safety, as usual, kind of are said to take precedence? But again, whose safety are we talking about, and whose health are we talking about, and how can we talk about it without talking about all these different systems? But anyway, we're going to listen to a couple more songs before the end of the show, and this next song is Sado Nation with Politics and Passion.
Yeah.
That was Frightwig with Tomorrow Never Comes. You have been listening to Satellite Skies on 3CR 855 AM or streaming on 3cr.org.au. That was my first experiment at the home radio thing. It was sort of as punishing as I expected to be, but here we go. So maybe next time I'll have some better things to talk about. I hope everybody is doing okay in this time, and catch you later. We're going to go out listening to Trash with Self-Indulgence.
Go! Yourself. Delete yourself. Delete yourself. Delete yourself.